Do you know the difference between empathy and care? Welcome to this week's main episode. Over the years, I've seen a lot of leaders struggle with empathy, and for very different reasons. Some of them had a lot of it. They often felt it drained their energy. Others had extensive training on it, and they were still uncomfortable using it or even talking about it. And quite a number still didn't see it as a useful ability at all. Maybe you recognize yourself in what I just described. As someone who scores higher on empathy, I had my own challenges. Showing it was often misread as being too soft. Not showing it got people to call me cold and too direct, especially for a woman. At some point, it felt like I had to figure out when to turn it on and when to better switch it off. It was also hard for me to see when it really helped the situation and when it didn't. This only changed when I understood what I had overlooked. It was the link between empathy and care. We often talk about empathy and care as if they are the same. They are connected, but they aren't the same. For me, it was quite a surprise when I learned that they don't even activate the same areas of our brain. So let me take you on a little discovery journey. It has helped me understand what empathy and care really are and why practicing both is what we need. I had read Emotional Intelligence, the book by Daniel Goleman, during my studies. It was first published in 1995 and not only became an international bestseller, it shaped how we look at leadership and human connection. So when I started my career in an American executive search company in 2005, I was expecting it to be part of what we assessed in candidates. But what I found is that it was barely touched. And when I talked about it with leaders and customers, it felt like the idea of emotional intelligence had been bolted on top of what management still heavily relied on. Strongly controlled, highly rational environments where the word emotion immediately produced discomfort or at worst reactions like this.
Let's not talk about these soft skills. I need someone to get the job done.
With the competency framework we started using from 2007 onwards, I saw the first shift, at least in how we selected people. We gave our customers candidate evaluations with the emotional and social competency layer, and this included empathy. But it had to be done with caution, and most importantly, in line with the primary leadership style at each client organization. Only later, when collaborative leadership became more popular, we could put more emphasis on it. Candidates started talking about empathy, and customers began asking for training that included it. Over time, the language of empathy got picked up. Organizations became more focused on employee engagement, and as many would say, more human. That was a clear improvement, but a lot of managers were not really acting on their improved understanding of human connection. And when I experienced that my own empathy was not contributing to better leadership, I got curious to explore what was missing. So I started with the word empathy itself. It's a relatively modern English word. Psychologist Edward B. Titchener translated the German word Einfühlung as feeling into and coined the word empathy around 1909. And what did I learn first? At that time, it didn't even mean what we use it for today. It was not about human connection, but aesthetics, about projecting our own sensations onto objects looked at, like a piece of art. Only in the 1940s did clinical psychology start using it in ways that developed into our current understanding. Just think about it. We inherited a word that originally wasn't about people, but more about feeling a connection with things. What I learned next was that Daniel Goleman, the godfather of emotional intelligence, had updated his thinking over the years. The book published in 1995 described empathy as a single competence. It was focused on three aspects: showing an interest in others' feelings, understanding emotional cues, and being able to see things from their point of view. All three were about reading other people well. And I think this is what most frameworks and training initiatives picked up primarily: empathy as the ability to read other people's emotional state. But together with Paul Ekman, he gave his previous work an important update in 2006. After that, he no longer described it as a single competency, but as three separate ones. The first is cognitive empathy, understanding people's feelings and reading what's going on inside them. The second is affective, or what most people call emotional empathy, so feeling what others feel. That's the kind of resonance most people talk about when they find empathy hard or even exhausting. It's when the other person's sadness or pain lands in our body too. The third one is the one that changed everything. Goleman called it empathic concern, and that is the most important part. His extension can be read like this: I see you. I understand what you're going through. What can I do to help? Which means the person is motivated to take action. And it's important to know that this third ability doesn't follow automatically from the other two. A leader can be excellent at reading other people. They can feel deeply with them and still not be motivated or able to take any meaningful action. Goleman updated his previous work with an important addition almost 20 years ago: reading someone's emotional state, feeling with them, and doing something to help them. Three separate capabilities. But it looks like people development largely kept teaching his earlier version. What surprised me even more was that care specifically had been described as a key leadership practice long before Goleman got there. Robert Greenleaf had written about servant leadership since the 1970s. Compassionate leadership came later, then caring leadership. Different schools of thought, different frameworks, but all of them naming care as central to human leadership. So if care has not been missing from theory, it's been there for over 50 years. Why didn't it translate into how people are actually trained? Maybe the most surprising part of my discovery journey holds an answer. Tanya Singer is a social neuroscientist and psychologist. For years, she and her team have been studying empathy and what she calls compassion at the level of the brain. In her research, she describes compassion as a state that combines warmth, concern, and the motivation to help. So Singer calls it compassion. Goleman calls it empathic concern. Others call it care. Three names for the same underlying capability, but put under the umbrella of empathy. What Singer and her team developed is a picture of what actually happens in our brain when we respond to other people's suffering. And what they found changes how we should think about empathy and care. When we empathize with someone in pain, we feel a version of their pain ourselves. That is what makes empathy hard and uncomfortable. We're not just witnessing people's distress, we are carrying our version of it. And humans are naturally inclined to avoid pain. And Singer's research showed that this happens because empathy activates the same parts of the brain that process our own pain. Compassion does something different. It doesn't pull us into the other person's pain. It connects empathy with care. So they are different operations, and they are not meant to work alone. Empathy gives us the information. Care moves us to do something with it. Most of us have been leading with empathy, but without care. No wonder it has drained so much energy without producing better results. Without care, our empathy was just mirroring what another person felt. It didn't motivate us to provide the help people actually needed. But as you can see, our body has always carried this connection. Using it had become difficult through the language we used. Now, I certainly think there are a few more reasons why care got left behind in practice, but timing was probably what mattered most for leadership development. By the time neuroscience made the distinction, our understanding of empathy was built around the language we used, and it had become the version that could be measured and observed. It hadn't been recognized that empathy and care are separate trainable and observable capabilities. So mixing empathy with care has led us to focus heavily on only one side of the coin. And I think in terms of leadership capabilities, this has cost us more than we have yet realized. Some of that cost shows in what we can regularly observe when managers have to respond to difficult situations. Let me invite you into a small exercise. I'm going to give you two short dialogues. Listen carefully. See if you can recognize the form of empathy each leader is operating on.
I need to talk to you about something. The tension between me and Mark has gotten worse. It is starting to affect the project. People on the team are noticing.
I can see this has been building for a while. I have noticed it too. You and Mark have very different working styles. I know it's not easy right now, but the project is close to the finish line. Hang on.
But it is affecting our work. We had another argument yesterday, this time in front of the team. It feels like he is actively picking fights with me. How should I manage such situations?
I really appreciate you telling me this. Both of you are excellent professionals. I have full confidence that you will find a way to work this out together. Keep me posted on how it goes.
Okay, I will.
And now the second.
Will, I wanted us to talk a bit about how things have been going. You know how much I appreciate having you on the team.
Thank you. Is everything all right?
I've been thinking about the last few months. There have been several things that have not gone quite as good as I hoped. The integration project and the presentation last Tuesday. You showed up late to several meetings. I know you have a lot on your plate.
There's just too much going on in my life right now. I know the project didn't go well. I just can't seem to get on top of all the work.
I know it's a lot right now. I'm sorry it feels overwhelming. Try to set clearer priorities.
I'm sorry, I know. I don't want to make any excuses, but it's just been too much.
I understand you. We all struggle sometimes.
I know I can do better. Thank you for understanding.
Of course. I know you will. Let's talk again next week.
Did you notice the difference? Didn't the first conversation feel rather cold? Maybe you felt the second one was more empathetic. What you experienced is the difference between cognitive and emotional empathy. The first manager notices the conflict. He understands why it's problematic, but he doesn't feel with his team member and isn't motivated to help. That is cognitive empathy without care. The person who comes in asking for help leaves without it, and the additional weight of being told to sort it out herself. The second manager practices both, cognitive and emotional empathy. But her discomfort with having to address the performance issues leads her to sugarcoat them with empathy. She feels it so vividly that the actual message gets lost as the conversation goes on. Her team member might catch the hint about prioritization, but probably feels more relieved and excused than urged to change his behavior. Empathy without care again, just with more emotional connection. Kim Scott, author of the book Radical Candor, calls this ruinous empathy. A manager gets so focused on protecting someone from discomfort that the person leaves the room reassured they're doing fine. They have nothing to act on, and the next conversation most likely won't be about improved performance. The challenge with this form of empathy is that it requires a lot of energy without getting us anywhere. I experienced this a couple of years ago with a client. Working with the leader, I observed a situation that wasn't working. He was experienced and successful, a warm and empathetic person, but he didn't know how to handle the situation that became more and more problematic. One of his team members was going through a very difficult time. A close family member had become seriously ill, the kind of illness that cannot be treated in a few weeks. The employee was doing her best while taking care of her family, but she couldn't keep up. The energy and time it took to be a caregiver were starting to show. The team was great. They supported and picked up as much as they could. Nobody was complaining, but it wasn't sustainable, and the leader knew it. Every conversation he had pulled him back into empathetic talks, but without a solution. He felt more and more exhausted, and even started to avoid the conversations. He couldn't find a solution because he was stuck on empathy. A few years earlier, he had also taken care of a sick family member, so he knew exactly what she was going through. He felt so much with her that he relived his own past. And instead of having a clear conversation that this was not working for both sides, he kept repeating,
"I really know how hard this is. I've been there myself."
The missing piece for him? The ability to help, the care for her, for his team, and for finding a solution. You see, I was actually there to support them on a different topic. But without a solution, his team would have had no chance to move forward, and my work would have failed. So I gave him direction with a single question. Have you asked her what she needs most right now? I still remember his surprised look. He clearly hadn't asked her that, but he immediately understood why this question mattered. The answer wasn't more empathy for her situation. The answer he got when he finally asked her was time and security. He eventually had the harder conversation, but it was the one that led both of them to see what could be done. And although it wasn't an easy solution, they managed to find an agreement that not only allowed her to take more time for her family, but also gave her the security that she would keep her job. He managed to shift part of her work and freed the team's capacity again. Finally, he took care, and he did what he could to help. Now, before we move further into care, I just want to mention another form of empathy. It's called dark empathy. Maybe you've come across it. If you listened to the episode called The Power Paradox, you may remember the dark triad traits: narcissism, Machiavellianism, and subclinical psychopathy. In the episode, I also talked about managers high on these traits using the language of empathy to manipulate. For many years, personality psychologists assumed a lack of empathy to be a key reason for such leaders to behave the way they do. So when they studied people high on these traits, they expected to find no empathy. Surprisingly, they didn't. About 1 in 5 people in their study scored high on both dark triad traits and empathy. And the rate appears even higher in senior management positions. What surprised the researchers most was that these people scored high on both kinds of empathy, cognitive and affective empathy. The cognitive ability clearly makes sense. Such people thrive because they can read people well. The emotional empathy can be debated. Most wouldn't expect such people to actually feel the distress of other people when we see how they handle it. Whether the people in the study actually felt it, or whether they have learned to perform feeling it convincingly, even research can't fully tell us. But the result is the same. What was clearly missing was compassion, the ability to connect empathy with care, and the willingness to help. So giving empathy training to leaders high on dark triad traits will not get them to care. They will just use it more effectively to manipulate. And this not only matters in how we select and promote such people, it has a strong impact on the people they work with, especially the ones they lead. And it also connects to the third type of people I mentioned in the beginning, the managers who don't see empathy as useful at all. They are often the ones who create and support environments where dark triad traits get overlooked and even rewarded. Now, when I say we got lost in translation and focused too much on empathy at the cost of overlooking care, I'm not saying we should invest less in empathy, because dark empathy and the lack of care only thrive where empathy and care are not part of the leadership culture. And we can observe carelessness across all layers of our society. That's why I'm saying it needs more attention now. Especially because AI technology holds the power that could move humanity into very different directions, toward our extinction or our extension, using AI as a tool that finally shows that we care. The stakes are high. We can all see this by now. So the question is, what is care? And how is it different? Let me give you the clearest definition I've come across. It comes from philosopher Nell Noddings. She wrote about care in the 1980s, decades before neuroscience could scan our brains to see where it sits. She said that care has two parts. The first part is full attention to the person, really seeing them, hearing what they are saying and what they are not saying. This is the empathy part, developing the resonance and willingness to be present in someone's situation. The second part is what turns attention into action. Our motivation shifts. We stop being focused on our goals and what feels easier for us. So not protecting our image of being a nice leader or avoiding harder conversations. Instead, we shift to what actually helps, giving feedback that needs to land, instead of sugarcoating it with empathy, finding ways that really help both sides and are not just focused on company goals. Empathy and care connect in a way that allows for decisions that bring real solutions. And these decisions are not soft at all. That's what my customer did. He found the best possible solution by having the harder conversation that the situation wasn't sustainable. By shifting from his discomfort of having to address it before finding a solution acceptable to both sides. Noddings called this motivational displacement. Our motivation shifts from our own goals to the other person's needs. The point she made was that care without that reorientation isn't really care. It's just understanding. So yes, understanding is our starting point. And most of us already managed this pretty well. Now it's time to act. If you want to feel the difference between empathy and care in your own leadership, just one question can already do a lot for moving into action. I already mentioned it earlier. What do you need most right now? The single question changes the orientation of a whole conversation. It moves you out of your own resonance and into the other person's reality. It signals that you're willing to do something with what you're hearing. This also gives the person in front of you the chance to reflect on this themselves. People who struggle not only need empathy, they also need orientation towards a solution. And that is clearly the responsibility of a leader, to give orientation towards finding a solution. Now, for anyone who still struggles with the word care, I really hope this episode was able to show you that care is not a personality trait. It is also not primarily a female skill or whatever kind of stereotype you have learned to associate it with. Care is human, and it's an ability we all develop through experiencing care ourselves. This starts when we are born as helpless little babies, dependent on care to survive. And certainly we all experienced care in very different ways. Maybe that is something which also led most training programs to stay away from it. When you look at your own caring behavior and how you respond to other people's needs, you will also reflect on the care you've received yourself. So it comes along with a lot of introspection and self-awareness work connected to how we care. So if you haven't experienced a caring environment or relationships in the past, you can be drawn back into these experiences the moment you start practicing care. I grew up very independently because both of my parents were working and I had to take care of myself from an early age. The independence and self-responsibility I developed were often something I was proud of, but they left me less caring in situations when other people required more help. As a younger manager, I strongly focused on getting people to solve problems by themselves. And it took a couple of challenging situations to finally reflect on this self-focus and to care enough to shift my perspective. No one can do this inner work for you, but the moment you move towards genuine care, independent of your own experience, you will learn something extremely valuable. Care propagates. It's almost infectious. The moment we start caring about others, it often creates a domino effect that travels through entire teams and organizations. And the best part, care can be trained. Tanya Singer's lab has been studying what happens in the brain when people practice care deliberately. And what they found is striking. Daily practice over just a few weeks changes our brain's response. People who train care show stronger activation in the networks tied to warmth, motivation, and helping, and less activation in the distress networks, which means they can feel what another person is going through without collapsing into it. You see, practicing care actually helps us to be present and to act, and that is the shift we're looking for. Not less empathy, but more care to turn it into useful action. So when I look at the challenges that come along with care, daring to care says exactly what we need. It's not just the courage to take action. We also need to accept that we've been trained on an incomplete picture. If you didn't experience much care yourself, and reflecting on it feels too tough, dare to care. Do the work, it helps. And of course, care needs courage because it clearly costs us something. It costs us time, hard conversations, agency and advocacy for human needs, decisions that don't protect our comfort, actions that turn into caring leadership instead. Empathy gives us the language to understand others better. Care gives us the motivation and ideas to help them. So let's dare to care and turn it into a key leadership practice. In the reflection episode, I will give you practices that are a good starting point. Now, one small note before we close. A number of you have come back to me with the same observation. Mondays are already attention heavy. A new episode landing on top of all your news feeds is not the best timing. And more important, you set the reflection episodes on Fridays, we're arriving a bit late. So I moved the publication. Main episodes now drop on Tuesdays, reflection episodes on Thursdays. Closer together, better timed. Thank you for telling me. Keep it coming. And stay curious, stay tuned. Thanks for tuning into the New Work Playbook, where work gets better because people matter.